Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, 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 you betcha, here we are today. Welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to be with you today. A very newsworthy day, as always. I'm laughing because... oh, hell, what else can you do? I tell you what, if you listen to everything on the cable TV news and all, I think you just pack up your crap and move to northern Alberta or something. I tell you what, I've been watching cable news a little bit this morning. My God, these people are nuts. They are crazy. I mean, just going on... they must have a whole department someplace down deep in the bowels of MSNBC and Fox and all those places that don't do anything but make spectacular graphics. Breaking news! Oh my God, look out, they're coming for us. I mean, they've got all that kind of stuff up. I don't know how MSNBC, I was watching them a little bit earlier this morning, they got the crawl going down below, and then on top of that, they've got a banner of some kind, and on top of that, they've got breaking news, and then they flash that big thing on the screen, you know, super, I don't know, my God, I tell you what, cable news will drive you nuts. I think a good thing just turned off. I mean, did you hear this? The Bush war in Iraq is over. Yeah. And the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah is finished, too. Did you know that? They actually, they didn't actually announce that either of those wars was over this morning, but I figured they must be finished because there wasn't one damn word about either one of them on the news today. Nothing. All I saw in the news this morning were video loops of guys walking around airports collecting toothpaste and shaving lotion and perfume and deodorant and water and, I don't know, personal lubricant and anything wet in a plastic bag. God, that could get embarrassing, couldn't it? Okay, get your shaving kit out here, your personal, and start dumping in every, you know, geez. I was going to say something else. I guess I better not. No, what if a guy had some of those lubricated condoms? Would they have to throw those in there, too, in front of everybody? Oh, God. And I noticed the women, they were not wanting to throw in their little perfume bottles. You know, some of that stuff's really expensive. I'm not talking about Midnight in Paris, where you can buy a gallon of it for $2.99. I mean the good stuff. You know what I'm talking about. But, now, I don't want to be too cynical here. Like I said, the wars are completely off the news. And by the way, I was remiss in not letting you know. You can give us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We're going to have some fun with this show today. First of all, let me tell you, in the second hour, we're going to have John Dean on, talking about his new book, Conservatives Without Conscience. I spoke to John again a little earlier today, had a great conversation. I love the guy. I love the guy. I really do. John Dean is a stand-up guy, and he's absolutely brilliant. And this new book of his is, if you haven't read it yet, please borrow it or steal it or something. But read this book. I guarantee you'll love this book. It's his last one, better, Worse Than Watergate, was just great. This one tops that. It really does. And so in the second hour, we're going to have John Dean on. And in the second hour also, we're going to have a gentleman on by the name of Terry James. No relation. Please, now, no relation. And he has a website called RaptureReady.com. All right? RaptureReady.com. I want you to go there, and I want you to take a good look around, and then you'll see why I'm looking forward to having this gentleman on the program today. Okay? RaptureReady.com. Don't miss it. 866-546-5254. Now, I don't want to be cynical here. I don't want to be cynical here, but like many of you, I do wonder why it is that every damn time things are going really bad for the U.S. and Britain, something like this comes up, like this, you remember that huge plot they uncovered by those guys over in Miami a while back? I don't know whatever happened to them. They're probably out on bail by now. Really, but you do have to wonder about the timing of these things. And is this nothing more than a, oh my God, look out, war on terror, they're after us again. We Republicans are going to protect you this fall. So don't remember, please do remember that I, George Bush, and the entire Republican Congress will protect you from these dirty terrorists. And don't forget, those Democrats are, they're really weak on terror. Don't forget that. All you people that voted against Joe Lieberman, don't forget how weak the Democrats are on terror. That's right. If the Democrats had their way, they'd just invite all those damn terrorists over here and say, here, we'll help you blow things up. That's what Karl Rove would have you believe, would he not? Hell yes. And another thing. You know how the Bush administration went after the New York Times for printing secrets in their newspaper here a while back? You remember that whole to-do over that? Remember how the administration said that the Times printing such stuff was going to put a damper on their terrorist investigation activities? Well then, why is this story all over the news? I want to know what's different. They said we gave away secrets of our spying on the phone and so forth. Why is this any different? Did you think about that? Why didn't they just keep this quiet so as to keep any other terrorists planning any such activities, keep them off guard, not let them know that, they're on their trail? Anybody else planning anything like this now, if there's any other groups, if this actually was a plan, anybody else planning anything like that, they're probably going to lay low now, and it'll be harder to catch them. So they let the cat out of the bag and probably, put us in further peril here. But why didn't they just keep it quiet? There might be a dozen or so other terrorist cells making plans to blow themselves and hundreds of other people up. So why not keep this story quiet and not let those other cells know that law enforcement really has their guard up? What's the difference between that and what the New York Times did, warning, letting them know that we were spying on the telephone and so forth? What's the difference? Seems to me if this whole story is legit, it may be, may not be, I don't know. The administration and the Brits should have kept their mouths shut, arrested the guys planning it, and then move on to their next target, be real quiet about it, so you could sneak up on the next group, and they would, they wouldn't be all alerted that something's happening. I'm wondering why this is plastered all over the news today. I'm not being a cynic or anything. I'm just saying. And did you see our hero? Oh, God, I'm so glad George Bush is our president right now. Who was it that said that? Rudy Giuliani? turned to Bernie Kerik and said, thank God George Bush is our president right now. Oh, I felt that way this morning. God, I had tears in my eyes when I was looking on TV and I saw George Bush get off and give a speech. I felt so safe. Oh, I felt so safe knowing this man is our president. I can't tell you. I got goosebumps right now. I got them all over just thinking of how great it is to have George Bush as our president. I feel safer than I've ever felt in my life. Oh, yeah. You must think I've been drinking by now. Did you see Bush talking about this morning? Did you? I mean, so predictably, he had his cowboy swagger going on for him. I'm George Bush, and I caught some more bad guys. I'm keeping you guys safe. Why is it that every time he heads for that piece of dried-up Texas prairie he calls a ranch, and I know, I've been there, why is it every time he heads out to that godforsaken piece of barren land of his that something really big hits the news? Why? Does anybody know? You know, I think the message here is, you know, war, there's more war. If you vote Democratic, you're pro-terror. That's the message here. That's the message Karl Rove and all the people are going to put out. If you vote for those goddamn Democrats, you're soft on terror. Because everybody knows those Democrats, well, they're easy. They don't want to protect you. We, the mighty Republicans, will protect you from all evil. Ah, yeah. Well, is it legit? Is it not? Who knows? I wish I knew. But in the meantime, everybody just lay low. Keep your cars in the garage. Stay close to the basement door. If you got a basement, just look out, because if you've watched cable news today, you know that terrorists are running amok. And there's some of these guys they can't find, so they may be in your neighborhood. So you just watch out, okay? Everybody just watch out. I want to know that my listeners are, you know, on guard today. And do remember one thing about terrorists. We never seem to, you know, it's not how many people they kill. It's not the numbers of people they kill at all. That is not what's important to them. It's how many they put the fear of God into them that's important. That's what's important to them. How many people they make petrified. How many people are sitting at home today? How many elderly people, old people, stupid people, Republicans, that don't know any better, are sitting at home watching this on TV today? Got a big tall one sitting there, big orange drink sitting next to him. Jesus, I didn't know. Why? Thank God George Bush is hunting these terrorists down. Think how many people are just scared to death over this. How many? How many people aren't going to fly for a long, long time once again because of this? I don't know. Let me know how you feel about it. I hope you do. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. This is a show today that I hope you will participate in, because I would love to hear how you feel. Do you feel this is all legit? Does it bother you? Does it concern you? Do you think the George Bush administration is doing enough to protect us? They would have you think so. I don't think they're doing diddly squat to protect us myself. I really don't think so. The Brits caught these guys. And are these guys, are they any more well-organized than the boys down in Miami were that didn't have any shoes and had to borrow money? Oh, my. I tell you. And the right-wing radio nuts, the flaming right-wing neocon radical nutcases like your Neil Bortz. And did you see Neil Bortz with Randy Rhodes on, what's that guy's name? Larry King. Hi, I'm Larry King. Did you see them on that show last night? Of course, Randy, as always, wouldn't let Borch get a word in edgewise, and Borch resents that probably more than anybody. Borch is quite the nutcase himself. He weaseled on Randy. He weaseled very, very well. She said that he called all the Arabs ragheads and said we ought to kill them all. And, of course, he came back and said, I never said kill them all. And he stressed all. He just said kill most of them is what he said on his program. So he weaseled. But that was quite a little fight there. And you could tell Borch was really... Well, I don't know. He was really taken aback by Randy wanting to get in every last week. And King was, too. King couldn't control her last night. And I love Randy, but I think when she was on the show last night, she should have had a little more back and forth. She does try and totally dominate. I got to tell you, just between you and me, don't tell anybody I said this. It's kind of inside information. I was in D.C. one time, and we had a meeting going on, and there was Randy and Mike Malloy and Ed Schultz sitting over in the corner, and let me see who else, Tom Hartman, Nancy Skinner, who else? I'm trying to think who else. Well, anyway, and Joe Biden was in the room. I think Ted Kennedy was in the room. Debbie Stabenow from Michigan was in the room. Maybe Byron Dorgan was in the room, and we're having a discussion about liberal media. And Randy took the floor, and let me tell you, she wouldn't give it up. Nobody else got a word in edgewise. It was fun to watch. It really was. I was sitting right beside her, and I just saw, you know, everybody looking like, God damn it, I want to say something too, but nobody got a chance to. Anyway. Somebody sends I'm on the chat room today. I'm on the Head On Radio Network chat room. And all sorts of crazy things going on here. Hello to everybody on the Head On Radio Network chat room today. The terror today, and I wonder how you feel about it. 866-546-5254. I'm scared out of my wits, really. I really am, as you can tell. I'm just really jacked up over it and got my suitcases packed and just ready to bail out of here. I figure they're going to come in any minute now. But they said they had this alleged plot to take down several U.S.-bound planes with liquid explosives, and it appears to be unlike anything the world has seen in years. Counterterrorism officials said Thursday the London plot appears to bear the fingerprints of Al-Qaeda, and may have been the big one that they've been dreading since September 11, 2001, particularly as the five-year anniversary of the carnage approaches. Now, this report here says that more than 20 people have been jailed. I've heard about 10 different numbers now. Terror threat levels have been raised to some of their highest levels. Some of their highest levels. And hundreds of flights have been canceled worldwide. We went on to say here, the scope of the magnitude of this attack is much larger than previous attacks. A terrorism expert at Singapore's Institute of Defense. Who the hell's Singapore's Institute of Defense? Why would Associated Press be quoting them? I don't know. He added that everything known so far points to involvement by Osama bin Laden. Osama's back in the news? Really? Osama's back in the news? I thought George Bush years ago said dead or alive, and they blew him up in a cave. And Osama? Osama bin Laden's back in the news? Last time I heard, George Bush said he wasn't concerned with Osama. Didn't care where he was. Didn't matter. And U.S. Homeland Security Secretary, a guy that we all have a great deal of confidence in, Michael Chertoff, he echoed the sentiments that it's probably a classic Al-Qaeda tactic, saying the attack, quote, was sophisticated. It had a lot of members, and it was international in scope, and he added that it was, in some respects, suggestive of an Al-Qaeda plot. You know, I guess they just haven't been giving Al-Qaeda enough press lately. That must be it. They're doing anything they can to jack up the American public. Have you noticed lately the intensive intensive campaign they've got, you know, look out for the terrorists in Iran with their nuclear, blah, 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 blah. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. That ought to be the campaign slogan for the Republicans this fall. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Vote Republican. Yeah, that'd make a good one, don't you think? Don't you think so? You know, they did want to point out that there have been dozens of thwarted plots around the world since the September 11th attack, and several that were murderously successful. They killed 52 people in London on July the 7th last year, 58 in two attacks in Istanbul, Turkey, 202 in Bali, killed 191 people in Madrid in 2004, and then blew themselves up days later when police were closing in on them. But you know, it's really working. We're fighting them over there, so we don't have to fight them here. And you know, if they could just get rid of these Al-Qaeda guys, we'd never have to worry about a terror again. That's right. That's what the Bush folks should have you believe. Ah, yeah. Got a note from my friend Larry Johnson, who's... you know, he's ex-CIA, and you've seen a lot about Larry lately. He's a terrorism expert. And I just read you what he said. He said, I'm sitting in Europe, scheduled his luck. He was in Africa last week. Had a correspondence with him last week. We wanted to have him on the show last week, and he was in Africa. So evidently he's on his way home now. He said, anyway, he said, I'm sitting in Europe, scheduled to take British Air back to the States on Friday, and I'm watching British authorities melt down in the face of an alleged, and he said alleged, terrorist plot. Rule of thumb, initial panicked reports are usually unreliable. The Brits reportedly have taken at least 18 people into custody, all residents of Great Britain. The last significant successful plot to bomb a plane was in January 1995 when a group linked to Osama bin Laden, this group included Ramzi Youssef, mastermind of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the nephew of Osama bin Laden, they had devised a way to carry on a liquid explosive disguised to look like water. The detonator was a combination of gun cotton, looks like cotton balls, a small light bulb, a 9-volt battery, and a Casio data watch. And Ramsey, and remember, this is Larry Johnson telling me this, Ramzi Youssef conducted a successful dry run of this device and planted one on board a Philippine airline flight in December of 1994. That bomb killed one man, a Japanese citizen, and almost brought down the plane. The plan was to blow up 12 U.S. jets transiting the Pacific Basin. It was disrupted when an informant, Isjak Parker, walked into the U.S. Embassy in Pakistan and ratted out Ramzi Youssef, and I never heard why he did that, but he did. So what's next? Larry Johnson says, here's what you do. Instead of a common-sense approach to security, the Brits have hit the panic button. Here's what needs to be done. No liquids on board a plane weighing more than 1 pound. 8-ounce bottles are okay, but you must drink the liquid to demonstrate it's not an explosive. So I guess if you got a bottle of nitro and you're going through the checkpoint, if you take a swig of it and swallow it, I guess you can get through the inspection. He said, so take a drink of it to demonstrate it's not an explosive. One carry-on bag per passenger. All carry-on bags are hand-searched, no cotton balls, no third-party cargo on passenger aircraft, and we'll see, what other suggestions does Larry have here? The latter is the real gap in aviation security. Right now, most checked baggage is subjected to inspection by a machine that can detect explosives. Hand-carry and cargo are not. You can deal with the threat of hand carry by physical inspection, but cargo is a different problem. And Larry goes on to say, in the back of my mind, I worry that this threat might be trumped up in order to divert attention from the disastrous U.S. and British policy or lack of policy in Lebanon. More likely, we have an informant in the U.K. that identified a potential plot that was in the dreaming stage but had not progressed to actual implementation. Rather than act like security professionals, the Brits are acting like panicked nannies. Very sad. That's from Larry Johnson. So thank you, Larry. Thanks for sending that. What do you think? 866? My word, you're quiet on this subject today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Thought you might want to weigh in on this subject today. You going to let me do all the talking today? Again, we've got John Dean coming up later on in the program in the second hour today. And a gentleman by the name of Terry James, which has raptureready.com. Do take a good look at that website. We might, I hope you'll call in with some questions for the gentleman that has that site up. Really would like to hear what you have to say. I, along with some other people, read one of the most frightening things that I've ever read, I think, on the internet today. I'm just reading on the chat room here. Talking about TSA agents. Would you get on a plane and fly today? Would you get on a plane and fly to Europe today? If you were in England, would you have any trepidation about flying here? Would it bother you at all? Hey, you know, I'm one of those people that, I don't know. I don't think about such things. I get on a plane and always figure, oh, what the hell? If it's your day, it's your day. You know what I mean? What's the odds? So that's I always play the odds. Anyway, I was talking about reading this website today. And let me see if I can get the name of the website here. Perspectives.com forum. Perspective, PERSPECTIVES.com forums. You want to go that there and you want to see some craziness, and I'll give you an example of it. This is, it's called a mixed forum, Democrat and Republican. Let me quote from there. First, nobody can stay. Got a frog in my throat. Nobody can stay out of any place anymore in the world. With WMDs, the very idea that there is any place on earth that is safe or that can be made safe is a joke. Isolationism is dead, killed by growing ferocious technology that knows no borders. Second, this is where it begins to get scary. We have a good president, far better than any Democrat could ever be. So let's get off of that. He will be out in 2 years and never run again, so shut up about Bush. My. Third, and the only thing that's important, is how we win this war on terror, and I will tell you how. We have to use irregular troops and local people the way we did in Afghanistan. Jesus, he's citing how we did it in Afghanistan. Did we win that deal in Afghanistan? Has anybody heard that we won that? Let's see, how long were the Russians in there and they got their butts kicked out, and how long have we been in there and it's just as bad as it ever was? Kabul's the only place that's halfway safe, and it's not even safe to walk the streets of Kabul. And this guy's saying how great we did the way we beat them in Afghanistan. He goes on to say, regular generals who are socialist Democrats at heart God, will lose everything for us, and the same applies with the Israelis. Get over it. And understand it once and for all, regular generals hate special forces. I wonder what an irregular general is. I don't know. He goes on to say, remember, this is on this forum I'm talking about. We must turn over the war in Iraq and in Lebanon and in the Palestinian territories to special type forces and get the regular army the hell out of these areas. Fourth, we should be spending the largest bulk of our military budget on our irregular forces. Who are the irregular forces? Does anybody know? He goes on to say, the way and way, way less on our regular forces. If we don't learn this and implement it, we will surely lose, and maybe lose the world to red racist China. Man, I'll tell you, when some of these right-wingers get going, He says, fifth, we must understand that Hezbollah and the insurgents in Iraq and elsewhere are backed up by Syria, which is backed up by Iran and North Korea, all of whom are backed up by racist Red China and Russia. These little guys are not fighting us on their own. Sixth, Muslim, you'll love this one. Muslim women can produce babies five times faster than we can kill them. Well, there must be something genetic there that I have not learned. Muslim women can produce babies five times faster than we can kill them. Body counts mean nothing. You kill one and three more spring up in his place. So you have a completely different strategy of special forces to have a chance to beat them. Seventh, a lot of points here. Brown people make good soldiers when they are well organized, right down to the family level, well governed by non-corrupt rulers, well led and well supplied. We need to get over our prejudices before we can win. God damn. In the paragraph before this, he's talking about how Muslim women are baby factories, and then now he's saying we got to get over our prejudices. And he goes on to say, and here's a second post made right after the first, and I forgot to add that the biggest backup for the terrorists fighting us all over the world is Democrat. That sounds like something George Bush would have written. The biggest backup for the terrorists fighting us all over the world is Democrats here at home and in Europe. This is our flabby, soft underbelly. And if we don't come down hard on Democrat traitors at home and in Europe, they will undercut our war effort and bring us down all by themselves. Every Democrat is a terrorist sympathizer. Just ask one, and he or she will tell you. They are all Jane Fondas now and anti-Semites to boot. It would also help... Boy. Yeah. It would also help a lot to increase the birth rate of our best and brightest young people while we're at it. For in the end, no nation can take and hold ground that their women will not populate with children. The greatest weakness of the U.S. and Israel as well as Europe is that they've forgotten how to have the kind of sex that makes the kind of babies that we need for our survival. We need to get back to basics on this. What do you say? Does this deal about increasing the birth rate and teaching women how to have babies, does that not remind you of something? Happened back in the years between like 1932 and 1945 in a certain country in Europe. That's in perspectives.com forum section. You want to look that up. Says the most efficient mass killers are the liberals who murder their own babies. They can't have concentration camps here because conservative Christians shut them all down in 1945. So they set up abortion clinics instead to satisfy their filthy lust for innocent blood. They're so evil, we should not have to share the world with them or their neo-Nazi Islamist allies overseas. And he's talking about liberals here. Remember this. We must kill them faster than they can breed for the sake of our children. Well, it's good to hear that we're dealing with them. Reasonable people. It really is. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. Don't go away, and we'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
And I hope that he heard me when I miss him every day that he was gone. But now I cry alone. I put on my bravest face and watched him off to war. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover will be coming home no more. And we were only children when we'd meet under the bleachers in a little town outside of San Antonio. But now
invite you to give us a call, 866-546-5254. What's on your mind today? Are you scared out of your wits over these terrorists? You know, we like to hear what you have to say today. You don't want to hear me talk all day. I want to hear you a little bit. Let's make it fair. Hey, let's go to the phones right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, it's Meg.
Hi, Meg. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, good. Where are you calling from?
Hey, I'm calling from New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Okay.
Yeah, with the cows. Well, I guess that's Vermont. But anyway, I'm up here on the seacoast. It's really nice. And I had been listening to you talking about the guy from Perspectives. Is that the name of the website? Perspectives.com? Anyway, and he was talking about getting rapture ready. And
actually, the rapture ready site is just that, raptureready.com.
Yeah.
The other one I was talking about there was Perspectives.
Listing off the guy who said we can't let the Democrats have babies. We can't reproduce the right ones. You know, he's very frightening. That's very scary. And it makes me scarier than any Arab terrorist that I've heard of.
Well, didn't the Nazis have a deal like that set up where they picked their blondest and bluest-eyed women and very physically fit and put them in camps and pick their, they were...
Let them reproduce.
Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. And you know what's scary is I hope that he's not going to decide who gets to have the babies and who doesn't. You know, who is he going to decide, like, who are the good people that can, you know, reproduce?
Well, gee, somebody has to decide. We just can't be having anybody have these babies.
Well, you know what? I have such confidence in our leadership in this country that I don't mind them deciding.
Oh, God, I wouldn't want them deciding what kind of ice cream I'm going to have,
yeah,
to tell you the
sure.
truth.
That's for sure.
It's amazing some of the ideas that go on. Yes, there are loonies on both sides of the aisle. There's no question about that. But
now, wait a minute.
There are.
How about that?
There are.
I hear you loud and clear, and I agree with you. But I just think, you know, we have got a collection of people in office right now who are nuts. I mean, really nuts. I mean, I think, you know, it sounds terrible to call the administration a bunch of psychopaths, but what's a psychopath? Somebody that doesn't have any empathy for another person? You know, they're nuts.
Yeah, they're true. I really believe that Dick Cheney, for example, is the best example of a sociopath and psychopath that I've ever known of. I majored in psych, and I think he's the classic. I don't think there's anybody a better example than him.
So isn't that it, though? Somebody that, you know, cares only about themselves.
That's right. Has no human emotion. Doesn't care one way or another about another human being. If they live or die, it's me.
And right. And I'm right, and you're wrong, no matter what.
Yeah. And they also have that. John Dean and I are going to talk about that a little later today. About the authoritarianism. Authoritarianism is heavy duty on their side of the aisle. Number one, people like Cheney, who are authoritative figures, who figure anybody that they talk to is going to do exactly what they tell them to do. And the people on the other end of it, which are the common guys that live out here in your neighborhood and my neighborhood, who will follow those orders no matter what they are.
Yeah.
And that's pretty doggone scary.
That is scary. And, you know, I have a very hard time. Well, I have a hard time understanding the administration, because I can't understand how they can just allow, you know, not, number one, go into war into Iraq, but also let, you know, allow Israel to keep bombing the civilians in Lebanon and you know, women and children. I mean, babies.
One after another.
With our tax dollars are going into those weapons and the planes and... It's awful.
Did you see Netanyahu on TV last night? He acted like, you know, they brought that up to him, and he said, "Well, you know, that's just kind of how it goes," with no emotion.
Yeah. And then you have the people that are just following blindly along, who I guess that they've just never been taught critical thinking, and they just are taught that they follow the leader. So we got all these people that are following these.
Yeah. Willing to follow them literally into the gates of hell, over a cliff, no matter what they'd ask, they would do. And you know, it's when you get into this authoritarianism, mm-hmm. You're talking about cult-like behavior.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if you've ever tried to talk to a true Mooney or somebody like that, but you can't you can't talk to them.
No, they just sort of, they've been told what to think, and that's it.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, this deprogramming that is a science, and it's every bit as hard to deprogram a true right-wing Republican as it is your average Mooney.
Hey, I got an idea. Maybe we can infiltrate the administration and start deprogramming.
I'm like Elmer Fudd said, I'm very, very scared. I don't know if I want to go in amongst them.
Really.
I do mine here with the microphone, but when I get out in public with them, here a while back I was giving a speech at a big Democratic function, and they were picketing me outside, and I thought, I pulled up there and said, you just don't know. Is one of these guys, they're so crazy. Are they going to pull out a gun and shoot you? Are they going to come after you? You know, I'm the kind of guy that if they come after me, I can handle myself, but you just don't know anymore. You really don't.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I think it's frightening that the way that these people have pitted the Democrats, Republicans, whatever, left, right, against each other. I mean, it's horrendous. It's horrendous. It's so contentious. But you know, I really firmly believe that we were founded by great men and women. And that we will survive, and we will persevere, and we will go on, and you know, everything will be okay. It just may be a while.
Yeah, it's my theory is it's going to be quite a while, but still, it is possible. They've done an enormous amount of damage to our country and to the world, and it's going to take us maybe a couple of generations to get things back to where they ought to be. But after all, this is America.
Yeah, and you know what? We have this is a point in history where we have a chance to make a difference, because I think, you know, we're going to have to really buckle down and make some, you know, really tough decisions. And I think, you know, we can all be part of that and help out. And anyway.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
That's how I feel. So, hey, can I just tell you that I have a blog with podcast with two
please,
other women?
Please do. Please
and
do.
You can find it at wakeupam.blogspot.com.
Now, I don't do shorthand, so now hang on here. Wake up.
Wake up AM, all one word.
Uh-huh.
Dot blogspot, one word, blogspot.com.
Okay.
And I'm the one that makes the other ones look good. I kind of sound like an idiot, but the other two women are really good on the program. So you should listen to it. It's really fun. We just kind of, you know, sort of like a roundtable political chat.
Well, I will.
It's fun. So
I will listen, and I hope you'll call back. And if you want to promote anything like that on the show, just let me know.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for letting me on the show. It's great to talk to you. I love listening to you. I love your point of view. I learn a lot, and I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks
and
so much.
Thanks. Keep it up.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I love getting new callers. Nice to hear from Meg up in New Hampshire. I got a friend that's from New Hampshire. And that's how he says it. I'm not making fun, but that's how he says it. He calls himself a New Hampshire hillbilly. He lives in the hills of New Hampshire. And I've seen pictures of his home up in the hills there, and it's lovely territory. You know, there are I've been around this country a lot. Been in every state and covered a lot of territory in this country, and it's nice to have done that. I've been fortunate enough to be able to do that. And there are places in New Hampshire that you could go, and if somebody would spin you around and you didn't know you're in New Hampshire, and West Virginia as well, you might think you're in the other state. If you're in New Hampshire, you might think you're in West Virginia and vice versa. There are places in both those states that look so close to one another. They really do. Beautiful places. I love West Virginia, and I love New Hampshire and up east. Somebody asked me the other day, if you had to build another home, where would you build it? I mean, I live here in paradise, although it's getting to be a little less of a paradise than it used to be because of the cost of the insurance we've been hit with here locally, everybody, and it's going to be quite a problem with Florida. I think there are going to be a lot of people move out of Florida that can't afford to live here anymore. The average people, and I'm talking about myself when it comes to income, and just your average Joe out here, the working guy. Really, it's going to be difficult for them to live here anymore because of insurance and so forth. And I don't know. Don't know what's going to happen with that. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was a pretty good mass migration out of the state of Florida because insurance costs have gone up. And you know doggone well, if we didn't have another hurricane for 20 years, they wouldn't go down any. They'll never, ever lower them. So it's just one of those things that this year has been particularly difficult. But if I had to build another home, I don't know what this has got to do with the show. I'd have to say that I'd build one somewhere up around Browning, Montana. Kalispell, up in the Flathead Lake area up in there someplace. God, I love that territory. I really do. But there's so many beautiful, beautiful places in this country. So many absolutely wonderful places to live. You know, there's used to go to all the Big Ten football games when Ohio State played out of town. And gosh, you know, Wisconsin's so beautiful in the fall. Wisconsin and Minnesota and out in the cornfields of Iowa. And being a farm boy myself, I appreciate that sort of thing. And the West, I love the beautiful West. Just a lot of great places in this country. I don't know, having not been a world traveler quite so much, I don't know that there's another place on the planet so diverse in its geography as our country is. It's just, you know, we've got the mountains, we've got the valleys, the snow, the heat, the subtropical. We've got it all here. And it's a wonderful country. And it breaks my heart when I look at what's being done to our country politically. I think back over the years, some of the political fights we've had, and they've just been disagreements amongst parties, and we patched things up, went on about our business, and we were good neighbors to the rest of the world. We were good stewards of the environment. Things have changed, and we are under the control right now of a band of people in this country who are very worrisome. We're going to talk a little bit about that later on in the program when John Dean comes on. But these people who are in power right now, these authoritarians, are very, very troublesome. They could very well end our way of life here in this country. I do worry about that. And when we were talking to Mega just a few minutes ago, yes, this is America. And yes, we can fight our way back out of this. But, God, we've got to start a great effort right now. And I think we are. I think down at the grassroots level and the netroots level, and I think we proved that just the other day, day before yesterday. And you know what I'm talking about, whether you're for or against Joe Lieberman's candidacy. We have seen that the little people can get together and get something done. That was what was so heartening about that whole campaign. Yes, and Ned Lamont's got a lot of money and all that. But really and truly, what won that election was that the little people got together and just dug in and fought like hell for Ned Lamont. And that was a wonderful thing to see. And these Republicans, they're out there trying to make some hay off of that. They're trying to spin it another direction. But I don't think we're going to let them do that. I don't think so at all. They're saying because we got Ned Lamont to win that primary that the Democrats are soft on defense, soft on security. Hell, I think the American public's starting to wise up a little bit. Don't you? Don't you think they're getting just a little wiser right now? That they have realized that this administration has done nothing but put fear in the hearts of America. They've ruled with fear for the last 6 years. They've been fearmongers all along. And how dare they call somebody soft on defense, soft on national security? How dare they? First of all, we've got a president in there that when told that we might be attacked on 9/11, said something or other to the CIA man who briefed him, okay, I'm paraphrasing now, you've done your thing, leave me alone. That's pretty much the way it was. And, well, you saw the results. And then he tries to capitalize on it. And they've been fear-mongering ever since. You remember the last Republican convention? I forget the numbers now, but how many times did they use the word terror? And how many times did they say 9/11 in their speeches? 9/11, 9/11, 9/11. If we allow them to do that, they'll be doing that ad infinitum from now until the end of time. And we must put a stop to that. And I think we can. Just because we believe that the State Department should be utilized in problems around this world, that we should try and solve some problems with diplomacy, something that this administration has completely abandoned. I don't know why they just don't tell Condi Rice to get in her office in Washington at the State Department and just stay there. Why make any pretense of going out and trying to do any diplomacy whatsoever? I don't know why. I really don't, because they have not done anything in the way of diplomacy here in this country. I don't think there has been a State Department that has been, well, totally neutered like this one. I had respect for Colin Powell, and it was obvious early on, that the man was being run over by this administration. And I don't respect him for going in front of the UN and saying a bunch of stuff that he knew damn well was wrong and was a lie. I don't respect him anymore at all because he sold out. But that proved to me right then and there that the State Department, for all intents and purposes during this Bush administration, was going to be null and void, and the foreign policy was going to be, well, it was going to be gunboat diplomacy from now on, and that's exactly what we've done. Anytime any problem has come up in this world, we've threatened to solve it with the military. And that's wrong. I don't care how you put it, that's wrong. And if they want to call me soft on security, go right ahead. But first and foremost, when a big problem comes up like we've gotten with Israel and Hezbollah right now, it's diplomacy first and military as a very last resort. The same thing in Iraq. Diplomacy first. You know, we had Mike Wallace. I haven't seen this yet, but I read some transcripts. We have Mike Wallace, going over to Iran, to Tehran. And although he suffered some difficulties in getting the interview, he finally did interview Ahmadinejad and came away with the impression that this man isn't what the American press has painted him to be at all. That he was very articulate, very intelligent. And yes, he's run off the head and said some things, hardcore things, but so is Bush. So is Bush. So if Mike Wallace can go talk to him, why can't Condoleezza Rice go talk to him? Are we too good to talk to the rest of the nations on Earth? Is that it? Are we just too good? 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. I do want to remind you that right after the news at the top of the hour, we're going to have a guest on here who runs a website called RaptureReady.com. I know this is a little bit of a departure from what we normally talk about on this program, but I do hope you'll call everybody you know and have them come on and hear this, because this guy's going to have some, well, interesting things to say. If you've read the website RaptureReady.com, you really need to go read that website. You really do. Really. I'm not kidding. All right. We'll deal with that after the top of the hour. 866-546-5254. If you have any questions that you'd like to put to the gentleman when we have him on, well, you're welcome to call. We hope you will. What did you think about Tony Snow yesterday? President Bush's press secretary. On Wednesday, he actually, and I don't know how many of you saw this, he actually, without question, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, did blame George Herbert Walker Bush for giving Osama bin Laden the incentive to plan and execute the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. He did. And this is what he said. Tony Snow said this at the Daily press conference yesterday. Now, when the United States walked away, in the opinion of Osama bin Laden in 1991, he's talking about Iraq, bin Laden drew from that conclusion that Americans were weak and wouldn't stay the course, and that led to September 11th. Do you realize the gravity of that statement? Do you? When we walked away from Iraq in 1991, bin Laden drew from that conclusion that Americans were weak and wouldn't stay the course, and Bush Daddy was the president. Imagine the press secretary of this president having his father put down that way. That led to the September 11th attack, he said. And it's important to realize that terrorists are not simply inspired by the American engagement in the world, but they have their own agenda. And it is an agenda that if we turn around and look the other way, they're not going to ignore. They will continue to build strength, and they will continue to build adherence, and it is vitally important, and it is a vitally important debate to have. He was referring to the withdrawal of American troops after Desert Storm, the war to drive Iraq from Kuwait, while George Herbert Walker Bush was the president. He was attempting to link that withdrawal to current calls by some Democrats to start a timetable for withdrawal of troops from Iraq. So he was saying we were weak then, that the Democrats want to be weak now by pulling out of Iraq, and he just put that, that's hard to believe. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, what I was hearing there. No one in the Washington press corps picked up on the fact that the presidential press secretary had just linked an action by the president's father to what Republicans are calling the cut-and-run strategy. He was saying in no uncertain terms that George Herbert Walker Bush cut and ran from Iraq, and that's what led to 9/11. I wonder if the old man heard that. Wonder if it got back to him. Hope it did. Certainly hope it did. Man, oh man. But then I hear, of course, that there is no love lost between the two, so that's what I always hear about that situation, so who knows. Well, it's coming up a time for news at the top of the hour, The second hour of the program is going to be interesting. We're going to have the people on from RaptureReady.com right after the top of the hour. And then a little later on, we're going to have John Dean on to talk about his book, Conservatives Without Conscience. You will want to hear that. I have an very interesting antidote to tell you about. I spoke to him about it earlier today, and he found it interesting as well. So we'll have an interesting conversation, I'm sure. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going to go away, have a little bit of news, maybe something cold to drink, and you can do that as well, and we'll be back in, about 5.5 minutes.
This is the Quality News Network. U.S. and British terror alert levels have been raised to red for air traffic between the U.K. and the U.S. because of a terror plot to simultaneously blow up a number of U.S.-bound jets over the Atlantic using liquid explosives. Authorities say the plot was close to being operational. 21 suspects have been arrested in and around London, and more arrests are expected. The targets were American, Continental, and United Airlines flights traveling to New York, Washington, D.C., and California. Other airlines have increased security, and all U.S. and British airlines are now banning all gels, lotions, and liquids from being carried on board. The only exceptions are baby formula and necessary medications, but even those will be closely inspected. Both California and Massachusetts governors have activated their state's National Guards to beef up security at their state's major airports. Israel has decided to delay the escalation of its offensive in southern Lebanon until the weekend to give the U.N. Security Council more time to agree on a possible resolution to end the conflict. The United Nations says it's still being denied safe passage by either side to enter southern Lebanon with humanitarian aid, and that hospitals are quickly running out of food, medical, and other supplies in Tyre and other southern cities, as well as fuel to run generators. In Iraq, a suicide bomber has killed at least 35 people and wounded nearly 100 near a Shiite shrine in the southern city of Najaf. Divers are continuing to search for two U.S. servicemen missing since their Black Hawk helicopter crashed 2 days ago in a waterway west of Baghdad. Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman, who was defeated Tuesday in that state's Democratic primary, says he's not concerned that the party's leaders are abandoning him now that he's announced that he'll run as an independent in November. A U.S. sailor from Oregon has been charged with espionage and is facing a court-martial. The Navy says the 21-year-old a petty officer is accused of taking a laptop computer containing classified information and trying to sell it to foreign governments. And the Department of Transportation reports that a laptop computer containing personal information of more than 133,000 Floridians was stolen late last month from a parked government vehicle. More than 1.5 million Chinese have been forced from their homes because of the strongest typhoon to threaten China in 50 years. Police in the Netherlands have arrested a Rwandan immigrant and charged him with war crimes and torture for his alleged role in the 1994 Rwandan genocide. He'll be tried in The Hague and faces life in prison if convicted. And in Sri Lanka, fighting continues near a disputed waterway reopened by Tamil Tigers yesterday. At least two soldiers have been killed, and more than 24 have been wounded. This is the Quality News Network. Business news is coming up.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
First-time claims for state unemployment benefits rose by 7,000 last week to 319,000. America's trade deficit improved slightly in June, but at $64.8 billion is still the fifth largest on record. Mortgage rates have fallen for the third straight week to 6.55%. Shares of airlines and travel companies sharply lowered today due to the terrorism plot in Britain and the cancellation of many flights. Target's quarterly profit is up 13%. JCPenney's is up 37%, both beating Wall Street expectations. Alaska's governor has imposed a state hiring freeze and is launching an investigation into BP's shutdown of its Prudhoe oil field because of corrosion in its pipeline, which the oil giant says will cost $100 million to repair. FEMA says the four giant construction firms that received controversial no-bid contracts to house Hurricane Katrina evacuees last September will be earning up to $250 million each to do similar work after future disasters, but this time those contracts are the result of the bidding process. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has announced a $500 million grant to a global fund that provides AIDS assistance in poor countries. Gold is trading at $647.50 an ounce this hour. Light sweet crude is down $1.90 at $74.45 a barrel. On Wall Street, the market is up. The Dow Jones higher by 48 points to 11,122. NASDAQ is up by 11, and the S&P 500 is higher by 4. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed hearing all the latest going on in the news today. Very newsworthy day today, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more news as the evening goes on about the possible terror plot going on over in Great Britain and all the confusion and problems that's caused for people around the world. But welcome to the show. We're glad to have you along with us. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. And right now, as promised, I promised you we'd have a gentleman on. His name is Terry James. No relation. And, well, we need to talk about that maybe. But anyway, no relation that I know of. And he's got a website called RaptureReady.com that, well, we'd like to hear him talk about it and find out what it's all about. Terry, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the program. Glad to have you along this afternoon.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I had somebody from the Miami Herald actually call and tell me about your website. I don't know how they found out. I don't know if they actually interviewed you or not. Did you talk to the folks at the Miami Herald?
They might have talked to me at some point or to my partner, Todd Strandberg, one of us probably. I just can't recall.
Okay. Big newspaper, the Miami Herald, anyway. I read it just about every day, and I know some folks. Anyway, they called and told me about your website and all. Mm-hmm. It's called RaptureReady.com, and noticed on there that you have a rapture index, and that piqued my interest. Can you tell our listeners what the rapture index is all about?
Well, this is the thing that always seems to attract media. Todd and I, either one can figure out why that it's such an attraction, but I guess it's just because it kind of encapsulates most of what we consider to be the prophetic indicators of what we believe it says in God's Word, the Bible, about what's going to happen in the end times. And the Rapture Index, some people have likened it to the Dow Jones Industrial Averages and so forth, but I think it's more like a speedometer. Merely it indicates how quickly we're headed toward what is called the Tribulation Era in the Bible, or the last 7 years of human history. And we believe as pre-tribulation believers, and you might recall the pre-trib rapture belief is wrapped up sort of in the Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins novels that have become so well-known, the Left Behind novels. But we're of that belief that the rapture of the church will occur before that 7 years of tribulation or God's wrath pours out upon mankind. And we believe that the indicators that we assign numbers to, or Todd in particular assigns numbers to, indicates how quickly we're approaching that hour of rapture, which precedes, again, the tribulation era. And I think five is the top indicator on any one given incident for indicator. For example, Israel, and it's being front and center in the news every day and under attack, as well as attacking in return. And in other words, at the center of the turmoil. And so that would be assigned a certain number. And I think five is the top. And I believe right now it is topped out at five, according to Todd's assignment of that number. You add the numbers up together of the 45 indicators that is on the Rapture Index, and you get a total number, and I believe it's at 157 or something like that at present. The top has been 180, I think, back in 2001, September of 2001. And it's more or less a speedometer showing how quickly, based upon these numbers as they add up, how quickly we're headed toward the tribulation hour. But we believe that before that happens, a rapture will occur. So actually it is showing how quickly the rapture is approaching.
So the period of tribulation that lasts about 7 years, and I don't know where the 7 years came from, but supposedly like the first half of that 7 years is going to be kind of a peaceful time. And
well,
then
from Daniel chapter 9, but the 7 years does. It's the prophecy there. And I'm sorry, what was your question?
And then after that first half of the peaceful time, then the Antichrist is going to rise to power?
No, the Antichrist will actually be rising to power the entire time, but he really is known as the Antichrist in the last 3.5 years of that time. But the entire era, from the time the covenant is signed, guaranteeing peace between Israel and its enemy neighbors, and involved with the rest of the world too, as a matter of fact, seems to indicate, from the time that this covenant is confirmed by this great world leader, the tribulation era comes into view, those 7 years, the last 7 years. And the Antichrist is known as a great leader, a man of peace. We see him symbolically in chapter 6 of Revelation when he rides forth on the white horse. And he comes as a great man of peace, but the Bible says it is a peace that will destroy many. We see that in Isaiah chapter 28, verses 15 and 18 and other places. So he really comes to full power, according to what we believe the scriptures say in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and other areas, at the midway point, or the 3.5 years point, when he stands in the rebuilt temple on Mount Moriah, the Jewish temple, declaring himself to be God and demanding worship. And the corollary to that, as far as Revelation is concerned, is chapter 13 of the book of Revelation. So we believe that he will be the beast, as he's called, right from the very beginning, the first very beginning of the signing of the covenant, but he will come to full power 3.5 years in.
Where does Armageddon come in all this?
Armageddon comes in, well, of course, we know then in basically chapter 18, well, really chapter, I guess, 17 through 21 really encompasses the war called Armageddon.
This is in Revelations you're talking about, right?
In the book of Revelation,
mm-hmm.
Yes. So basically, it covers that entire area, probably from Revelation chapter, I'd say 17, all the way through. It's really talked about, I think, in chapter 19, the beginning of chapter 19, just before Christ's literal return to earth, in verse 19, chapter 19, verse 11 of Revelation. But it is actually a war. Again, it begins, I believe, throughout this entire period we call the tribulation era, and it's just a ratcheting up of the conflicts, I believe, in the Middle East and throughout the world, the Bible tells us. And it will culminate, of course, there on the plains of Jezreel, just above Israel there, the place called Armageddon or Megiddo. And just as it seems that the world will completely blow itself up or bring itself to an end, Jesus said he would return. If he didn't at that time, there would no flesh be saved. So that's what we believe Armageddon is, a ratcheting up of hostilities. Really, we probably are seeing the very beginnings of that now, we believe.
The Middle East being the cauldron
right,
here catalyst, that we're talking
the
about.
Catalyst, yes.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like some others that I have talked to, do you look forward to this time?
No, I don't. I don't. That's what people always ask. Do you want bloodshed? Do you want killing? No. That's the last thing we want. We want, as a matter of fact, peace on earth. But the fact is, God's word says this is what's going to happen. We believe it's going to happen, just as God's word says. Our support for Israel, from this standpoint, is simply that God said he would bless those who bless thee, talking to Abraham, and I will curse those who curse thee. That's in Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3. We believe we are to at least support Israel's right to a nation. They make mistakes. I don't support everything Israel does by any means, and I certainly don't want them to spread bloodshed. I don't want bloodshed spread on them. That's not our purpose. But the fact is that God said these things are going to happen, so we believe it. And you know, some people want to kill the messenger, but we believe that that's what God's word says, and that's what we adhere to.
Well,
we're literalists.
Looking at the geography of the situation and then looking at Judaism, what about the Jews? Where do they figure in all this, in the rapture?
Well, the Jews, they are the nation that came out of Jacob. Judah, the tribe of Jacob, basically. But all of Abraham's offspring are promised to be the nation Israel. And so we believe that through the promises God made Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, beginning back in Genesis chapter 12 again, chapter 17, then coming down through Psalms 89 and many others, 2 Samuel chapter 7, there are just so many scriptures that you could just name them for hours, really, if you wouldn't go into all the scriptures that says that God gave the land to Israel. We believe it. Again, we're literalists. We believe that that is their land, and it encompasses much more than that little sliver they have now.
Well, here's what I don't understand. I know in the rapture, haven't been brought up in a Christian church myself. I know in the rapture that in the rapture, Christ is going to descend from heaven and is going to take, I believe the term is, his bride, the church, out from among the sinful world. The Jews are not part of the church, are they?
No, they're not.
Mm-mm. Then
they're not a part of the church.
Then if he's going to take...
Not collectively, but individually they can be if they accept Christ.
They can be.
If they accept Christ, just like any human being.
But if they're Christ. Jews and he comes to snatch his bride, the church, out from this sinful world, and people remain as Jews, that means they're not going, right?
No, Jew. We're talking about Jews, the race. There's Jews, the race, and there's Judaism.
I'm talking about Judaism, which about 80% of the people in Israel, at least 80%.
If they haven't accepted Christ as their Messiah, as Savior, then they will be left behind. That's what God's word says. Only the people who have accepted Christ as their Savior will be taken when Christ returns. And those scriptures are found in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 13 and 18, 1 Corinthians 15, verses 51 through 55, and other places.
So they're going to be left behind along with anybody who has not accepted Christ. Anybody.
They're in the same category as anyone who they're considered earth dwellers who are rebellious to God's plan for humanity, the salvation plan. So,
and what's going to happen to those folks?
Well, that's what the LaHaye Jenkins novels were all about. They, you know, studied based on the studies of the Bible. And basically they will go through those who are alive for as long as they live, because it's going to be a time of great martyrdom, great death and destruction, according to Revelation chapter 6 through 19, basically. So they will be here on earth to suffer that wrath.
I noticed
the wrath of God.
I noticed in your on your website, I was looking through the frequently asked questions, and somebody asked, I think you asked your own questions and then answered them, but is the Pope the Antichrist? And I found it interesting where it says it's very logical to conclude that the pontiff will someday fulfill a major role in the Antichrist false church. What does that mean?
Well, based upon chapter 17 of Revelation, it says that there will be a harlot who rides the beast. Now, the beast there is a symbolism of the Antichrist system, the beast system, the system of the last world government. We find out in Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 7, and then in Revelation chapter 13, verse 1, we find that in Daniel chapter 9, a lot of places that beast is talked about in Revelation chapter 17 as being the beast upon which the back of rides the false church. Now, the apostate religious system that will be left on earth and will grow in an ecumenical sense, and whereas it says it comes out of Rome, as a matter of fact, the area of Rome. Now, I don't personally believe that the Pope is necessarily going to be the false prophet. See, there's two antichrists, basically. The great world political leader who is the most powerful. He is the one that will become Satan incarnate. He will be, I believe, indwelt by Satan at some point. But there's also the false prophet who is his John the Baptist, I guess you would say. Just as Jesus had John the Baptist as a forerunner, lifting Jesus up, well, this man will lift up the Antichrist, the false prophet. And it says he comes up out of the earth. Now, symbolically, in symbolic terms, in eschatological terms anyway, coming up out of the earth means the land, or come up out of the land of the earth. That always means the area that God gave Israel, that land over there. Now, it says the Antichrist, the beast that is the political, geopolitical beast, he will come out of the sea, meaning the Sea of Nations, meaning the Gentile nations. But so we think that perhaps that this false prophet you're talking about, although he will rule over this false religious system that will come out of Rome, he will actually be a Jew, an apostate Jew, who will head this false religious system that we find in Revelation chapter 17 that rides this beast. And the Pope, I think, will play some role, whoever the Pope is at that time, because I think there will be the Catholic system, in my view, is a large part of it, is of the apostate, just as much as a lot of Protestantism is part of the false system, because they don't adhere to true, godly, biblical doctrine.
What part of Protestantism would you say is in that category?
Well, I mean, I would say there's some good in all of them, all churches, and there's some not so good in all churches. In other words, there's some that don't adhere to some. For example, I think in some of the Reformed churches, the belief that I'm talking about some of the Methodist Reform and the Presbyterian, some of these people, and even now in some of the, I'd say Baptists, all of them, believe that somehow the church or the religious system here has replaced Israel as God's chosen people. Well, that's a false teaching. And I think that this final system is going to be made up of false teaching and false prophets, because Jesus forewarned of that very thing when he gave the Olivet Discourse in Matthew chapter 24 and Luke 21 and Mark 13. So there's many things within that, in those churches, that could qualify them to be a part of this false religious system, I think. But the main thing that makes them false is that they don't adhere to the belief that Christ is the one and only way to salvation. And they say many ways to salvation, many ways to God the Father. Well, that's going strictly against the message of Jesus Christ, who said in John chapter 14, verse 6, he said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No man or person comes to the Father except by me. Now, either he is who he said he is, he's God, he is the Savior of the world, or he was a liar, as they say, or he was a lunatic. So a person has to make that choice, including these religious leaders.
So
if they choose wrongly, they're of course part of the false system.
So going back to the Antichrist, it's somebody that's going to appear to be a great leader, a peaceful man, and then turn into.
He's going to have the answers.
But initially, he's going to be somebody that we look at as a great leader and you know, good guy and all that sort of thing, and be taken in by this.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not talking like a George Bush here.
No, I don't think that Bush fits the mold whatever.
And when Hitler came on the scene.
Yes, I think Hitler would have fit somewhat that scene.
But did he come on as looking like a good guy to the world?
He did right at the very first. He certainly did. In 1930, probably 38, 37, he certainly did look like it to a lot of the world. Had people like Henry Ford thought he was a great man, remember, and some others. But it didn't last long. Now, I believe that, here's what I believe that the Bible teaches. I believe that every generation, probably every so many generations, Satan has a man prepared to fulfill this role, because Satan, above all people, knows that God does not lie, cannot lie, and he knows this man is coming. He's going to have a man prepared. He doesn't know which one or when, because he can't tell the future, but he's got somebody prepared. I think he had Hitler prepared for this, and some others in the past, Napoleon maybe, some others, because they all want that. These great leaders all seem to want to put Europe back together again in a revived Roman Empire type situation. That's what this Antichrist character is scheduled to do, according to Daniel 9, 20, basically 25 through 27.
And you're not for any sort of world order of any kind. You're more or less for the individual countries.
I believe in national sovereignty. God established the nations.
What nations were they that God established?
Well, he established Israel to begin with.
And what other ones?
Before that, you know, it was a mishmash of all of the, I call them the Amalekites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Electrolytes, all those in that area that God told Joshua to go in and cleanse out of the land of Israel, because he'd given the land to Israel. And then we come down to Israel, and Israel wanted to do like all the other nations, it said. They begged God to have a nation like all the other nations. He wanted to establish just a covenant between himself and the Israelites. We find there in Joshua and some other places talking about, in 2 Samuel, wanting to, 1 Samuel rather, wanting to talk about Israel wanting to establish itself like all the other nations and have a king. Well, God wanted to be their king, but he let them have their way. And it refers back there to the nations, and some of the nations, the ancient nations of the Babylonians, and some of the others, going so far back as the Assyrian.
But those were nations that, in many ways, in today's world, we would look upon as evil. They were authoritarian with kings and so forth, and not with any sort of democratic government.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But they were still sovereign nations. God allowed man to go his own way with regard to establishment of nationhood. Now, we saw that all the way back in Genesis chapter 11, when Nimrod wanted to establish his own kingdom. Well, God said, okay, but you're going to do it apart, not together. What he did was scattered the peoples over the whole earth and gave them different languages at that time, separated the languages, separated the continents, as the word says, separated peoples. But he did let them have their way. Now, this goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 1, where God, and chapter 6, where God is, first of all, created man, and man, he wanted man to walk with him in the garden and be he be their God, and they be his children, and they rebelled. They fell for Satan's lie in the garden. Now, see, I'm a literalist, and I know this sounds far-fetched to a lot of people, but I believe that God's word means what it says, and so I'm a literalist, and I believe that actually happened. And,
well, let me ask you, I've only got a couple of minutes left before we have to go. I noticed on your timeline that you have posted on your website, you said Iraq was freed in 2003. Do you believe that?
I don't know if I wrote that. Now, who? On what?
It's on your website. That? It's on the timeline section there. It says Iraq was freed in 2003. I found that rather curious.
Was freed? I don't know the particular article. I'd have to know the particular article because I write a very small portion of this overall thing, so I don't know exactly what you're referring to.
I couldn't see how anybody could think that Iraq was freed in 2003.
Well, certainly I don't think, you know, well, I guess it was freed from Saddam's rule, we could say that, but I don't know what the context is, right? I would try to comment on it.
All right. Hey, we have to go. I want to thank you very much. I don't know what to say. A lot of this is very interesting to me. A lot of it is very mysterious to me. I do thank you for being on.
I hope you will go to the site and just.
Oh, I have
some of the articles. You might give you well and read them in depth, though.
Yeah,
you might see, you get a little bit better understanding at least where we're coming from on it.
All righty. Hey, thanks so much for being on the program today.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, that was interesting. We'll have further comment about that a little later on. I've got another interview coming up that I've got to get to, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have John Dean on the program. I guess we'll have to discuss this Armageddon thing a little bit tomorrow here. I ran that a little long, so we'll be back in just a moment.
Peter said to Paul, you know all those words we wrote are just the rules of the game, and the rules are the first to go. But now talking to God is Laurel begging Hardy for a gun. I got a girl in the war, man, I wonder what it is we've done. Said to Petey, you gotta rock yourself a little hard. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. I got a girl in the war, Paul, the only thing I know to do is turn up the music and pray that she makes it through. Cause the keys to the kingdom got locked inside the kingdom, and the angels fly around in there, but we can't see them. And I got a girl in the war, Paul, I know that they can hear me yell. If they can't find a way to help her, they can go. They can't find a way to help, or they can go to hell. Yourself a little harder. Pretend the dove from above is a dragon and your feet are on fire. But I got a girl in the war, Paul, her eyes are like champagne. They sparkle bubble over in the morning. Bubble over, and in the morning all you got is rain. Sparkle bubble over, and in the morning all you got is rain.
Ah, yes, we're back with you just a couple of minutes past the bottom of the hour. Welcome to the Guy James Show, those of you just joining us, and for everybody that's been with us and in the chat room and on the internet and all that, everybody's been eagerly anticipating our next guest, John Dean. John, welcome to the program.
Nice to be back, Guy.
So good to have you along with us. The last time we had you on, we were talking about your great book, Worse Than Watergate. I don't brag up authors. I really don't. But doggone it, I don't know. There's something about the way you write your story that's just so fascinating. And we want to talk a little bit about your book today, Conservatives Without Conscience, which I think you've outdone yourself. I really do. Best book about politics and the things that going on nowadays that I've ever read. There's no question about it. You have some...
That's a nice endorsement. I thank you.
Well, you've just got some amazing things in this book. I mean, this is one of these books, and we've discussed that a little bit on the show. This is one of these books that you pick up and your jaw drops sometimes going through it. And first of all, one of the things that I enjoyed reading very much in this book, I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I'm a liberal Democrat and have been so all of my life. But I have great respect for real Republicans. And I've talked about that so much, that where are the Barry Goldwater Republicans today? And I didn't know until I read this book that you had quite an association with Barry Goldwater.
A lifelong one. As long as I knew him from the time I was 13 years of age, back in about 19, I guess I met him around 1953, shortly after he'd come to the Senate, until his death in 1998. His son and I, to this day, are best of friends.
Wow, you attended school with your son, right?
I did.
Okay, and you and Senator Goldwater were collaborating on a book.
Well, the book you just mentioned, "Conservatives Without Conscience," actually started in a conversation I had with the senator in 1994, where he and I were talking after the election, where the Republicans recaptured the House. And he was saying to me, "John, I don't understand this incivility that has crept into conservative politics. I just don't know where, there's nothing conservative about it, and it's become standard operating procedure, and it's just outright nasty, vicious politics, and it really has no place." And he said, "I don't understand, for example, he had just received a copy and looked at a tape that was being sold by Jerry Falwell that accused Clinton, Hillary and Bill, of everything from conspiracies to murder to drug running." He just said it was absurd. I've never seen the tape.
The Clinton Chronicles, yeah.
I've read of it. And he said, "John," he said, "you know," he said, "I may not agree with everything Bill Clinton wants to do, but I do agree that he should be given a chance. And these cheap shots against Hillary Clinton are just, they're just really uncalled for." He later, interestingly, would become very close to the Clintons. I think Bill Clinton was probably one of the last people to see Barry Goldwater before he passed away in the hospital.
Really?
Yes. What happened is, in response to one of Goldwater's shots across the bow of his of Republicans who were taking cheap shots at the president, apparently Bill Clinton sent him a note, and it started up a friendship.
Wow.
Anyway, that's another story. The other thing he did, Goldwater said in 94 to me, he said, "You know, I don't understand how the religious right has gotten control of the Republican Party. And if we're just selling our soul to win elections, we're going to pay for it someday, because these are the most divisive people I've ever met." He said, "I think every man and woman is entitled to their own beliefs. But I'll tell you one thing, religion and politics don't mix. I've worked with these people, tried to work with them, but they believe their policies are God-given and they cannot compromise them. And politics is all about compromising. But, John, I'd like to find out why all this has happened." And that's where this book started.
Well, speaking of mixing, well, I don't know if it actually is mixing, but a figure that we're all familiar with, Chuck Colson. Chuck seemed to find religion after the Watergate affair was all over and so forth. And as I understand it, probably still to this day is out doing some preaching and some speaking and so forth. But... In reading about this book that they were going to put out about you, The Silent Coup, wasn't very...
Huh? They published it. They got it on the bestseller.
Well, yeah, I made the bestseller list, but Colson's attitude about that wasn't so Christian-like, I didn't think, after, especially like you had an association with him after the Watergate thing was all over with.
It was less than Christian. It kind of shocked me that he would buy into this totally bogus account of Watergate that claimed that it was the result of a call girl ring operating at the Democratic National Committee, which my wife had an association with, and therefore I ordered the Watergate break-in to get dirt on the Democrats. The source of the story is a man who's been in and out of mental institutions his entire adult life. We would sue. We would successfully prevail after 8 years of litigation, and the defendants spending $15 million, they realized we weren't going to go away, and they were in a heap of trouble, so they settled. But along the way, what was most striking to me, and another reason behind, actually it's the reason I called Senator Goldwater, was the fact that Republicans were, and particularly the conservative and the hard right were buying into this as the real account of Watergate, and some still do.
You were the mastermind.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that I'm the mastermind, and this bogus story that it really is about a sex scandal. They ignore the fact that the guy who claims this also claims he's from Alpha Centauri, that he's an abandoned space captain waiting to be retrieved.
Yeah.
So,
well,
not exactly the strongest source to rewrite history on.
And we might add that a gentleman by the name, I use that very loosely, a man by the name of G. Gordon Liddy was involved in this smear as well.
He was indeed, and has not let up on it. But that's Gordon. He has got his own dysfunctional personality problem.
What did you ever do to make him hate you so?
It doesn't take anything to have. I never did anything to Gordon other than tell the truth. But he doesn't like the truth out.
Well, he's probably, and I don't know if we'll agree on this or not. He's in your book. You went into a subject that's close to my heart, and it's about this authoritarianism. And I can think of no one that's a better example of it than G. Gordon Liddy.
He is, and he's too good an example, and for that reason, I don't use him as a personification of it. He is actually the prototypical authoritarian dominator and authoritarian personality. He is, to do that, I figured people would say, well, we know why you're doing that. And so I mention him in passing and tell the story, but I go on to say when I actually discovered this body of information, it's 50 years of research into authoritarianism that's been going on that I was totally unaware of. I dropped Liddy. I mean, it's quite conspicuous to anybody that knows Liddy that he's an authoritarian.
Well, you wouldn't be able to find
now controls conservatism.
You wouldn't be able to find a lot of examples quite like him, I don't think.
Thank God.
This study that you talked about that you discovered, and I think it was new to you, and you went into it in depth in this book, and it's fascinating, of authoritarianism. Do you want to let our audience know a little bit about Mr. Milgram and how he came up with this study?
That's one phase of it, and it's a phase that actually occurred fairly early in the research where he was looking at whether or not what kind of people would follow situational authority, where somebody in a scientific setting wearing a lab coat and giving a volunteer instructions to administer electronic shocks to a purported learner who would learn word pairs faster if they received punishment when they failed to. They were really not testing the learner. They were testing the person delivering the shocks, and the person delivering shocks actually was not delivering them but did not know it. And they found something like 62 to 65% of the people who came into the lab would indeed follow the authority figure. And what I was interested in this for is because it's typical of people who are in the CIA or the NSA who are doing things they know are illegal today, but they're following orders. What happens to their conscience? Well, Milgram found out what people do in this situation based on post-interviews. He found that they assign their own conscience. They just set it aside and adopt the conscience of whoever is giving them instructions. So that's one type of conservative without conscience. I went on broader and found a whole 40-year study of authoritarianism that I was unaware of that shows how people fall easily into submission under authoritarian figures because of fear and the ambiguities of life, whatever. They become very aggressive then in pushing that worldview, and they're very conventional people. They also are often religious. They admit to being nasty and mean-spirited, a lot of other unattractive traits. Same with, they've also done a lot of research on social dominators who are the leaders, and they're typically men, and they have great desire for personal power. They are totally amoral. They test consistently to have no morals whatsoever, and they're highly manipulative and a whole other series of very unattractive traits. Now, what's interesting about this isn't social science putting this tag on these people. These are what these people say about themselves. And when I found this guy, I found all this information, it just clicked, and it explains so much of what's happening in conservatism, because when these people test high, they also constantly report that they are conservative in their politics.
Well, I have to tell you, and you and I discussed this a little bit on phone earlier today, I was reading this, and I actually wasn't aware of Mr. Milgram's research, not at all. And I want to tell a quick story. When I was at the university, my good buddy and I were always looking for ways to make money. We didn't have any money, and we needed to make a buck or two. And so at the psych lab, we went over and applied and got hired to take part in this study, and it's exactly what you're talking about. I was put in a room with a little control panel in front of me, told me that it controlled a shock to the guy in the room next to me, whom I couldn't see. I was to ask him these questions, and every time he gave the correct answer, I was to do nothing, move on, and ask him another question. And when he got a question wrong, I was to push this button and give him a little shock. Don't worry, the guy in the lab coat said, it won't hurt him a bit. And each time he gives a wrong answer, turn the dial up a little bit and give him a little more of a shock. So we go through three or four of these questions, and he starts getting them wrong, and I give him a little shock. And next thing I know, I hear the guy over there saying, ah, you know, he's and the guy in the lab coat said, don't worry, I'm in charge here. I have full responsibility. Don't worry about it. Just do as I say. And I asked one more question, and this guy yelled in the next room. I said, that's it. I'm not doing this anymore. And the guy said, hey, don't worry about it. I'm in charge. Just do what I told you. You have no responsibility in this. I do. I got up and walked out of the room. My very best friend, who was in down the hall doing the very same thing, he went through with it all the way. And as it turns out, the guy in the next room wasn't hooked up to anything. It was all a ruse just to see if we would follow orders. And I had never heard anything about that until you wrote this book.
Well, that's interesting. It's a study that was replicated on campuses and in labs across the United States, and the results have been consistently striking as to the number and percentage of people. As I say, it runs around 60 to 65 people who will actually follow the orders, who have no conscience, who just follow, you know, when the authority says do it, they do it. Those are the people that I write about in this book.
Well, it scared me when I read that, because I start seeing a bunch of people that I see on TV every day that are these people.
I understand. Exactly. I lay all this out. Guy, unfortunately, I have to rush. I notice they have got me booked right after your show, which is on the 45.
All right. Well, we could talk for days and days about this book.
Days about it, particularly somebody who's been through this. So you have a special empathy and understanding of it. You're the first person I've talked to who's ever taken the test.
Well, you're the first one I knew about that wrote about it. So, hey, John Dean, thank you so much. Thanks for writing a great book, and much continued success with it.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a little close booking there. I found out shortly before the show today that they had back-to-back bookings, and we wouldn't be able to have him on as long as we wanted to. Yeah, that actually happened. I'm reading through this book of his, and maybe many of you already knew about this study. I didn't. I don't know where I was, because I was a psych major, and I didn't know about that test. And as I recall, I got paid $8 or $10 to do it, and so did my buddy. And as it turns out, I wouldn't go along with the authoritative figure, and I am a true liberal. And my buddy did go along with everything he was told to do. And today I must tell you that we are no longer associated because he's as hardcore a right-winger as you'd ever want to meet in your life. So it really gave me the willies when I read that. It really did. Hey, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy.
Yes.
How are you doing? This is Derek from Vermont.
Hi, Derek.
Corey Stone on the Tom Hartman talk show, because that's all I can get on to. Anyway, I'd like to talk about that Milgram study, because basically I'm a psychology major, and it's something I've known about for years and years and years. And I have read John Dean's book, and I'm really glad that you were able to get John Dean on as an interviewee today. I think it's a very enlightening book. I'm so glad. He was speaking toward the end of the conversation before he got overscheduled, whatever, about the idea of people without conscience. I think it's people that get overridden by their conscience because they sort of, like, in denial, put their trust in somebody else rather than taking the responsibility to have their own consciousness guided by what their own family values were as they were brought up, you know, during their developing years. What do you think about that?
Exactly right. They can walk away from doing something like some of these people do in political life today and have a totally clean conscience because someone else took the responsibility for their actions. They didn't have to. They're clean. They're fine. And it's an amazing process to watch. Others, you wonder about, you know, on the one end of the scale, the actual authoritarian figure who gives the orders. You know, I didn't want to put John Dean on the spot and say it, but I'll say it. Dick Cheney heads the list. Here's a guy that when he gives an order, he expects it to be followed. He's manipulative. He will do anything he can do to get his way, and obviously has no conscience about it.
Conscience is a really important thing, and it's very easy to manipulate, as the Milgram study. I mean, that is, as you well know, and Mr. Dean well knows, that's a very, very old study. It was a classic study back then, 30 years ago. But it was a classic study back then, but it's so easy to manipulate. I tend to really get into B.F. Skinner and the Watsons from the early years before Skinner with behavioralism, behaviorist psychology, and how this can match with cognitive psychology and so on and so forth. And it's something like the Nazis in Germany picked up real quick without even having the studies. And I'm really glad you had him on the show. I appreciate you being there, and I'm so glad you were able to have Mr. Dean on your show.
Well, thank you. He's a wonderful guy. He and his wife both. And if you've read the book, you know, and if our listeners haven't learned, John Dean has been through hell and back from some of these hardcore right-wingers. They have given him a tough, tough time. And thank God he won the lawsuit against the folks that put out that book. All of a sudden, I can't think of it, The Coup, which did label him as the mastermind, as it were, behind the whole Watergate affair. And it was poorly researched. The guys didn't know what they were talking about. And even G. Gordon Liddy got in on it. G. Gordon Liddy is a nut.
He's the guy who puts his finger into the candlestick and said,
yeah.
And during the cocktail party said, well, the problem is not the pain. The whole thing is not mining the pain.
Yeah.
Is that the guy you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God, strange.
He's crazy. You know, he's been successful. You know, and here you go. I mean, here's a guy that's turned that insanity of his into a multi-million-dollar career on the radio.
Which would be really wonderful if they were sort of like in places where they could get some help. Unfortunately, many of them are identified as being enablers of people that are suffering, you know, psychiatric, you know, things, or, you know, actually being a citizen of the United States or something like that, you know. Anyway, I thank you for allowing me the time to speak. I thank you for your diligent radio show that I always enjoy when I have an opportunity. Unfortunately, it's not as frequent as I used to be able to enjoy it. And you stay on the air and be a good guy.
Hey, thanks, Eric. Good to hear from you.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Fascinating book. And if you haven't got it, like I said, borrow it, steal it, go to the library and see it. Do what you have to do to read this book. I guarantee there won't be a single one of you that doesn't think this is a fascinating book. There are things in it. You know, I've always, and you've heard me say on this program, where are the Goldwater and the Rockefeller Republicans? We may not agree with everything both those guys thought of, but they were good, decent men who had a conscience, who knew that bipartisanship was important. They could get along with guys across the aisle and could work with people across the aisle. That was the way true government was supposed to be. Goldwater and Rockefeller both knew that and knew it well. And Goldwater, before he died, he looked at these people that are in power today and said, you know, this is a brand of conservatism with which I am unfamiliar. And I have talked to many other Republicans who have said the same thing. I know a gentleman who's a and I don't know how he can do this, but he's the Republican Party chair in an important county here in Florida. And we had a conversation about this, and I won't embarrass him and bring up his name, but we had a conversation about this. And here he is, the Republican chair in a very large Republican county, and yet he despises this brand of conservatism that we have today. But he said his mission as a county chair is to try and change it back to what it ought to be and what it used to be. Oh, for the days when we could look across the aisles and look at each other in a friendly way and say, you know, I don't agree with everything you said, Charlie, but, you know, by gosh, let's get together and let's work it out. And we can, because we both love America. To hell with our parties. Yeah, we're both members of a political party, but to hell with that. Let's get together and work out what's best for America, for Joe and Sally back home in your district and Chuck and Mary back in my district. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Isn't it a shame it's gotten to be what it is? And I don't think I'm a bit biased on it when I say that it is the right wing that started this terrible, terrible political rancor that we're suffering through today. The likes of, and I put it at the feet of Newt Gingrich to a great extent, and to, well, of course, the drug junkie over in Miami, Rush Limbaugh. What a shame it is. What a shame it is that so many of these people, these people that John Dean identified in the book, the authoritarian figures, have been taken in by the likes of those men and will follow, no matter what they say, believe everything they say and take it as gospel. And it has caused a political division in this country that I can see no end to. I don't know what it's going to take to bring us back together again as a country. I am worried. Yes, world events bother me. World events bother me a lot. I hate what's going on in Iraq right now. I hate it. I hate it like everything. Like most of you, I think about it every day. The terrible conflict going on between Israel and Hezbollah today. The hundreds of people needlessly dying. Civilians. It's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing. And yet in our country, we've got this political division. We can't even agree on what's right and wrong over there. We can't even agree that slaughtering civilians is wrong. We can't even agree that bringing home our men and women from Iraq is the right thing to do. We have one side, their side, accusing our side of not wanting to provide security for the United States of America, when nothing could be further from the truth. Because we believe, and we believe to the very fiber of our being, that bringing those people home and trying to put things right again in that area will lead to better security for the citizens of this country. Not more bloodshed, not more military might, no. An understanding, the ability to be able to get together and talk to these people in these other countries and these other cultures to get at the root problem of this terrorism. We've made no effort that I can see, either party that I can see, has made no effort to get to the root of the problem as why we're faced with the terrorism. There will always be evil in this country. There will always be evil in this world. There will always be conflict, as we mentioned yesterday. As long as humanity survives, there will be those who are hell-bent upon causing conflict and controversy and death and destruction. Such is the human mind. But we can do what we can do to contain that. And we're not doing a very good job of it right now. We're doing a terrible job of it right now. Well, I'm sorry we couldn't have John Dean on a little longer today. We originally thought so. We had to give way to one of the big boys. That's how it goes in that whole thing. Do go to that that website, raptureready.com, and read that. I know that none of you, practically none of you, and myself included, believe a word of practically what's on that website. But I think it will help you get into the mind of what some of these people are thinking, so that we can maybe work toward I don't know if it's possible to get to maybe an understanding with these people just how wrong some of this is. It's worrisome to me. Well, I appreciate very much you being with us today on the Guy James Show. I really do. Hope you'll be back with us again tomorrow. We'll